Long pause from unknown parts of Metropolitan New York City! I'm the hip and this is Leap!
Yes, yes, hello, hello, good evening, or good morning, good afternoon, whenever you might be listening, everybody out there in H&L Nation. We do apologize for the one-week hiatus, a little scheduling difficulty, but we are back to recap all that is taking place.
Yes.
Oh my god, so much. Where do we ever begin? Oh my, this is probably gonna run at least like 3 hours, so buckle up or maybe pop your favorite sleeping pill just in case you're so exhilarated by the next what the next few hours await that you can't possibly stay up for so long. So without further ado, what do you say, Mr. Hip?
0-4 New York football. Yes, yes, yes. Let's get right to it. Oh, gosh, the Giants on Monday Night Football. Oh, the Giants on Sunday Night Football. Oh, loss. Yes.
Yes, prime time has been very bad to the Giants. Has not been kind at all. Oh, boy, 0-4 to start the year. Who would have thought? Well, you would have at least thought two losses for one of the teams, but the other team, oof. But we do also come down a stretch in the baseball season as the Yankees continue their push for the playoffs. And how about a little New York Islanders back at the Coliseum? A little nostalgia for all those who miss the Islanders playing in the old barn. Of course, it's now the refurbished barn, or the new refurbished technological wonderland, as every new arena is. But I guess before we get to the baseballs and the hockeys and the HMOZs and the HBs of the week, I guess we got to start with the one thing that nobody really cares about as the ratings are down, and that would be the NFL and our, as you pointed out, lousy football team. So what are your takeaways the first 2 weeks?
Just really, I think the quality of the offensive lines around the league are just atrocious. This is not to single out the Giants.
Everything is atrocious.
It's not to single out the Giants, but
no, the line has been a pitiful.
The offense is down. Scoring is down compared to last year by almost 5 points a game in the first 2 weeks. Passing touchdowns are down. I think
fantasy owners are crying.
Why?
Licking their wounds.
Their offensive lines are so much crappier. I don't know, but I think that seems pretty apparent with guys that should be off to relatively decent starts. You would have thought, like the Andy Daltons and the Eli Mannings of the world, have just been absolutely hideous. Here's an interesting starting point for the Giants. Consider these numbers: 14, 10, 17, 19, 19, 13, 3, and 10. That is the number of points the Giants have scored in their last 8 games.
Yep. I guess we have to go back. Well, are we talking about the preseason games too? Is that what we're including in there? And
no, they've scored 19 or fewer points in 8 straight games. Haven't scored 30 since 2015. They're averaging 13.1 points per game over those last 8 games for the Giants.
Wow, they haven't scored 30 since 2015. That I didn't realize. Wow. The offensive guru, that is Ben McAdoo, right now is completely bewildered by his offense. I mean, I guess we're going to start with the Giants before we get to the Jets. I mean, the Jets, you know, it'll be the same. You can basically rinse, wash, repeat what you're going to say for the Jets every single week for the whole season. But a Giant team that came into the year with aspirations of maybe going to the Super Bowl, of course, I had to pick them. That's not looking so good, although my Minnesota sleeper pick was looking good after 1 week, and then they lose their quarterback, and they basically throw the game away against Pittsburgh, but we'll get to that. But the Giants right now look absolutely just hideous, pitiful, atrocious, whatever adjective you want to use to describe what the Giants are, at least on offense. But, you know, we didn't recap the Dallas game, but 3 points. What else are you going to say? I mean, Denver just ran over that Dallas defense. So for those that thought that Dallas played, you know, just stifled them defensively, well, look at what Denver just did. I mean,
Ezekiel Elliott rushed for fewer than 10 yards in Denver.
Was it 9 carries for 8 yards for Mr. Elliott? I'm sure, you know, there are so many that are just so upset that the wonderful Ezekiel Elliott has struggled. I mean, the Giant game, it was okay. Awful in the Denver game, actually was accused of quitting in the Denver game, just basically gave up because he was playing so badly. which I would love to hear, and we'll see and hear. But the Giants right now, problems galore on the offense. Obviously, you start with the offensive line, which has been, you know, you're basically beating a dead horse right now when you mention the name Eric Flowers. But, I mean, the guy, we talked about it in our previews. We talked about it in our shows leading up to our preview. Eric Flowers has been a complete disaster. And right now, here's the one thing I'm going to – and I sent out a Twitter about this yesterday that got a couple likes and retweets. So the Giants passed on Laremy Tunsil in the 2015 NFL draft. They drafted Flowers the year before. And the thing about Flowers, and I think I may have mentioned this, when they drafted him 9, everybody immediately said, you know, all the draft experts, oh, my God, they're reaching. Oh, what a reach. Oh, he was ranked here. Oh, you had these 4, 5, and 6 guys ahead of him on this rankings list. Everybody immediately said reach at number 9. Whatever. He's in his third year now. You would think he would be able to develop. So 2 years ago, they could have had him in the first round. He was supposed to be a top 3 pick. A photo got out that he smoked a little weed. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. God forbid he smoked weed in college. Oh, who does that? So because of that, he dropped all the way to 13, I think it was, to Miami. But the Giants could have had him. But they passed on him for that reason. But consider this. 2 weeks before, they decided to re-sign Josh Brown. And we all know what the story was with him and what the Giants knew. And, of course, they knew everything about Josh Brown. But I guess, you know, terrorizing your wife is not as bad as smoking a little weed. So they could have had Tunsil. Maybe their offensive line looks in a lot better shape. Again, Reese did nothing to address it other than signing DJ Fluker, who explained to me last night why the Giants, with their right tackle Bobby Hart going down early in the game, an injury which they knew full well about. And when he went down in the first quarter, you know, they dressed DJ Fluker, who was also apparently, you know, banged up, but they still dress him and activate him. But explain to me how you dress and activate him, knowing with him injured, knowing that your right tackle is liable to go down in any minute, which is exactly what happened right at the beginning of the game. And then Fluker doesn't even see the field because I guess he's too injured. So now they have to reshuffle. They move Pugh to the right tackle, who had a tough game himself. He wasn't bad, but he had a little bit of a rough game. He's out of tackle. And then you move Brent Jones to left guard to play right next to Eric Flowers, and that left side was absolutely annihilated by Detroit all night. Both Jones and obviously Flowers, who was his typical pylon, red carpet, you know, just right this way, guys. Here's Eli, right this way. His typical self, as we kind of mocked him last year. But that is inexplicable how you can dress Fluker if you're not going to play him, knowing that your right tackle's already hurt. So that was just completely ill-conceived on the part of the Giants, and that's all on the head coach. And he has to take blame for that. But, I mean, that offensive line right now, they have two guys that are competent, at least when they're in their proper positions. But now, what do you do? I mean, are you going to move Pugh to tackle? He's not a tackle. I know he's got drafted as a guy who could play both, but he's just not a tackle in this league. What about, you know, Wheeler, the undrafted kid from USC? Fluker, do they just think he stinks, or is he legitimately hurt and they don't know, you know, if he can play? I mean, this line, I mean, they have nothing. And if you can't keep a statue like Eli Manning, who could barely move his feet upright, their offense is going to look like this every game the rest of the season. Duh. And Ezekiel Ansah, they made him look like Deacon Jones yesterday. He had 2 sacks all last year. Had 3, like, in the first, it seemed like, 5 minutes of the game.
Is there something to be said that the quality of the offensive line is more important when you have a quarterback that pretty much has zero mobility? You know, the Seahawks are in a similar situation with the quality of their offensive line, but at least they have a guy that can scramble and make plays. I mean, Eli used to do that, but you can't, you know, he's 36, 37 years old. You can't expect him to do that at this point in his career. Maybe a little maneuvering, which he's really shown very little of doing. He made a couple of pretty, like, wild throws last night, but, you know, he also went down softly on a when the pocket collapsed a few other times. So you can't expect him to scramble much. Rollouts? I mean, I don't know.
He's on a rollout. He needs a clean. Well, his pocket awareness last night was left a lot to be desired. I mean, he was bad in the first half. He actually threw the ball, I thought, pretty well in the second half. We'll get to, you know, some of the drops that we saw in the second half by Brandon Marshall. Has anybody seen Brandon Marshall anywhere? But, I mean, he was pretty bad in the first half. There were a couple of coverage sacks. It wasn't all on the offensive line. And they just obviously no running game. You talked about Perkins, and you know, you said how he looked terrible in the preseason. Well, he's picked up right where he left off. He's looked awful. And I agree. I've seen it a few places. You know, just play Orleans, start Orleans Darkwa. At least he runs with authority. He's not dancing behind the line or being patient. There's no patience. There's no Le'Veon Bell patience with this offensive line. You got to go straight ahead. And what I also, I don't understand how you abandon the running game or you just don't even commit to a running game at the very early in the game, knowing that your beleaguered and battled offensive line needs all the help they can get. And you always hear, it's one of the old adages, that the offensive line gets into a game flow, into a rhythm when they're able to go after the defenders in the running game. They're able to, at the point of attack, they're able to, you know, get after it. They're able to, you know, it's a lot more comfortable for most offensive linemen to run block as opposed to just putting them on their heels at the very get-go. I know it's a passing team, and obviously a passing league, of course, and a passing team in the Giants, but they have to commit to a running game to at least take a little bit of pressure off the offensive line and give them an opportunity to get into the rhythm of a game. And that is also something that McAdoo has done a terrible job of. And Orleans Darkwa, I think at this point, has to be the guy to at least get carries in the early going. I don't know. I mean, you said right away Perkins looked bad. Well, he's been just as bad, worse.
Yeah, he's just another guy, a jag, and Orleans Darkwa did show a little bit of burst last night. I mean, didn't have any big long runs, but
no, he's not going to
expect that. That's okay.
Yeah.
At least a guy that's going to try to wear down the defense a little bit. Perkins seems kind of he's hesitant.
He's tentative.
He does anything, and he's more upright. He's not a downhill.
He's shown obviously he could be a little elusive and shifty. You know, he could be confident, but right now he's been bad. And I mean, I understand the line, we know, but Darkwa at least is showing you he can run north south. He'll lower his shoulder, he'll run with authority. He's not going to be tentative or hesitate in the backfield. He is the guy right now for this offensive line, for this running game, and they need to find a way to get it going, because if they don't, they are looking. I mean, they are potentially looking at something that you never would have foreseen, which is maybe after six games, looking at like 1-5 with their schedule. And
unfortunately, the offensive playmakers didn't help mask the offensive line deficiencies with misplays. I mean, Brandon Marshall just looks like he's what happened when Andre Johnson went to the Colts. I mean, just completely falling off a cliff out of the blue.
That's a scary analogy. Andre,
I mean, that's what it looks like so far. Like, there was that pass in the end zone that he didn't even put an arm above his head to try to catch. He was in single coverage, and the defender
that was
just
a terrible effort. Oh yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up. That
I didn't understand that.
Yeah,
no, that he didn't even try to catch it.
No, terrible effort. That he should be most.
And then the one that was down the seam that he did try to catch just clanked off his hands. And look, it's gonna happen. I get it. He did get open at least.
Hit him right in the numbers. So that was a perfectly thrown ball. I mean, that's what Eli started dealing. And that was when he started looking good with his throws, had a little bit more time. And that was a perfectly thrown ball. Hit him right in the numbers. Hit him right between the 1 and the 5.
You want to find a little bit of positivity going forward? How about the promise of Evan Engram? I realize he had the pass that was kind of behind him that clanked off his hand and turned into an interception.
That was Eli's fault. That wasn't.
It was hard to tell because Eli couldn't lead him with the pass because it was a zone and there were defenders on both sides of Engram. So if Engram had stopped,
he should have then went through his progressions. He should have went somewhere else. Right,
I don't know. Maybe Engram was supposed to stop. Maybe you don't expect him to.
He's a rookie. I'm not going to. Eli
if
has
he had stopped, then the pass would have been right on target. But nevertheless, I mean, you could see the offense that Engram, the potential that he's going to offer. You know, because why not stick him outside and forget Brandon Marshall?
I mean, he's essentially a wide receiver. I mean, that's what he is. I mean, he's less as a tight end, but I mean, he's not going to be blocking too much, and you're seeing that they're committing to him a lot sooner than you would have thought. But that's also because obviously Beckham, and you know, we haven't even touched on him yet. And then obviously Marshall has been MIA.
I don't know what you could touch upon with Beckham. I mean, they showed his warm-ups, and I mean, he looked fine, I guess, running the routes and during warm-ups. Four catches for 36 yards indicates maybe he wasn't quite 100%. Probably isn't. That's okay. But if he's 85-90%, I think he needs to be out there.
I mean, the question is, you know, his pain tolerance, and I thought they could have given him just one more week, just, you know, let him get close to 100% so he can be his typical explosive self. I mean, you saw he was limited yesterday. You know, there's still rolling coverages towards him. He was double teamed a handful of times. I mean, he played, what, 60% of the snaps or whatever it was. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, but didn't have much of an impact on the game. Had a drop late, but whatever. He was getting tackled short of the first down on that fourth down.
Yeah, that
drop, I don't care about.
I mean, but it was the game was over.
No, yeah, it was done at that point. So I who cares about that? But yeah, I mean, Marshall, I mean, he's the guy that you say, all right, step up for us, and he has not done it. And like you said, I was more upset. The drop led to the touchdown on the punt return. So, I mean, that directly led to it. If he catches that ball, there is no punt, and, you know, who knows what happens from there. So that led directly to the punt and the touchdown return, which made it 24-10. And then, yeah, like you said, that effort that he gave on an end zone ball was horrific. I was more upset about that because that
he just kind of like engaged the defender like almost, you know, like grappling rather than putting his hands up to try to even attempt to catch
the pass.
That was odd.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, Eli put it there. He said, go get it. I'm putting it there for you to go get it. Go get it. And Marshall didn't. And I was more upset about that than the drop. But I mean,
right, there's other things. The Giants go to Philadelphia next week. Is that on the pocket?
Yep. That looks pretty. And then they go to Tampa Bay the week after that. Tampa Bay looks pretty good. I know obviously they played the one game so far, and they played the Bears. So you're not going to go too crazy, but Tampa Bay has a good team. And Philadelphia, we know, is talented.
You know, Wow, the line was -3.5. It jumped to 6. Wow.
Really? Oh. 6. I mean, the Eagles have annihilated the Giants a few times recently at the link.
God.
So, I mean, maybe that's
when I checked maybe 5-6 hours ago. It was -3.5, and now it's -6.
Wow, it went up that much. That is amazing to go up that much in that short a time. I mean, everybody just thinks the Giants can't score. So, why wouldn't we be laying money on the Eagles if, you know, a 3-point favorites, if the Giants can barely score double digit points? I mean, it makes sense, I guess. That quickly is still incredible. But, I mean, yeah, the Giants right now, they face a schedule which they play 3 of the next 4 on the road. They go to Denver a couple weeks after that. You know, they have Tampa, as I mentioned, and they go to Denver, which they typically don't play well there, and a Denver team that looks great right now after trouncing the Cowboys, which was good news, of course, if you're a Giant fan. I talked about the schedule. They had their two cupcakes back-to-back in the Rams and the 49ers. The Rams may not be an easy, you know, may not be a cupcake, but the Rams, I'm still not sold that they're going to be a good team this year. I know they had a very easy and very convincing win in their first week, but then, you know, lost to the Redskins this past Sunday. But the Giants right now looking at potentially a 1-5 record. I mean, depending on how this goes, if they don't fix the offense and the offensive line and figure something out, go out and see if you can bring somebody in, because there's nothing within that can help them. I mean, Joe Thomas, I'm not going to sit here and say go trade a first-round pick for Joe Thomas. He's a name that you've heard out there however many times as a potential trade, candidate, not just for the Giants, for a team that is in desperate need of a all-pro left tackle, and that's what he is. I don't know what else is out there. I don't know if they are looking. I don't know. I guess they have – I guess they did recently – they just a little while ago said that Ereck Flowers will be the left tackle next week, but – I think that's a colossal mistake. I don't know how you can possibly put him out there. He has not worked. He has just not worked out as a left tackle. Jerry Reese has been stubborn. He stayed committed to him. I know it's only his third year, but the fact that he had a potential Super Bowl team, and he is letting his offensive line sabotage on the heels of last year, sabotage what could be a Super Bowl contending team. It's just unfathomable. And things right now are looking very bad. I mean, the defense has been okay. You know, Detroit really didn't do much in the second half yesterday. You know, they're going to get better, and the defense is going to be very good. They have the potential to be very good. They were missing their starting cornerback yesterday in Jenkins. Apple made a terrible play on that touchdown to Marvin Jones. I mean, he had him covered and then just completely just didn't even attempt to look for the ball, make a play on the ball, and Jones is able to catch it right over him. Oh, thank you very much. And They were missing their middle linebacker yesterday. So, you know, the defenses will be fine. I don't have to see JPP celebrating a sack when the ball is on the ground and he's not going after it. So he should know better. Whatever.
I mean, it's pretty much a continuation from last year as far as, you know, just not being able to put up a lot of points. So that's really what all this comes down to. You have to score to win the game.
You have to score. They can't score. You got to score. Oh, like the Jets. The Jets have been up.
Yes, the Jets
have
been up. Jermaine Curse, one of the top fantasy receivers after 2 weeks. We all saw that coming. You know, look, Josh McCown is actually, like, when he's given time to throw, he makes good throws. I don't know how much you've watched, but, like, the Duke can still sling it. It's just that he takes a lot of hits, and he's going to get injured, and Bryce Petty's going to be starting games later this year. And it's pretty much the Sam Darnold watch at this point. I mean, the New York media is all over, you know, Sam Darnold, you know, probably being the favorite to be selected number one in the upcoming draft. And I just want to point something out that's interesting. So Sam Darnold, the quarterback of the USC Trojans, had a thrilling victory against Texas.
Yes. I saw a little bit. I was a little inebriated, but I did see a little bit.
Yep, on Saturday night. It was a great game. Yep. Great finish. And so talking about how the NFL ratings are down, well, how about the attendance for the football games in Los Angeles this past weekend? So you had the aforementioned USC Trojans hosting the Texas Longhorns, which had an attendance of 84,714. Okay, about what you would expect.
Yeah, right.
They combined. Okay, so on Sunday there were two home games in Los Angeles: the Chargers hosting the Dolphins and the Rams hosting the Redskins.
Well, the right? Chargers are Carson City, though, right? The Carson City Chargers, CCC.
Nevertheless, take a guess at what the combined attendance was for the Chargers and Rams games. Keeping in mind the total attendance for the USC Texans was 84,714. What do you think the combined attendance for the other two games was?
Well, I do know, and I guess this will help me out a little bit, I do know that the Carson City Chargers Stadium only holds, like, was it like 30,000? Or it's a low number. I know it's a low number. So, all right. So I'm sure the Rams, you know, nobody cared about the Redskins, and nobody cares about football in LA anyway, and that there are two teams now, which is just – it's just so comical. It's such a joke. And I love it that there's somebody there. All right, I'll guess. Let's see. I'll say the Chargers probably were close to max capacity at 30,000. Let's say the Rams were at – they probably announced like 50 – so I'll go and say 72,000.
Combined?
Yeah.
So that would be 30 for the Chargers and 42 for the Rams?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
All right, well – it was a little more than that, so a little better. It was 25,000 for the Chargers, 56,000 for the Rams.
That's what they announced. But I'm sure it was a lot less than this.
You still total that, and it's less combined than the USC-Texas game. I just think that's incredible.
So it was 25 combined for the Chargers.
Yep, Chargers had 25,000 people at their game. And of course they lost in an epic fashion, missing a field goal as time expired.
It's amazing. The Chargers, they must sit down and blueprint new ways to lose football games. I mean, they are writing the book on all the different ways to lose football games. It's incredible. I mean, that team is just, and it's unbelievable. It's just the wacky ways. They blow leads. They come back, and then they lose in heartbreaking fashion. They miss field goals. They throw bad pick, bad turnover, punt return. It doesn't matter. Yep. It's unbelievable. Yep. That is great, though. I love that. I love it. Love it. And I love that in conjunction with the fact that ratings are down and the NFL is trying to, give you their spin job as to, well, the Florida, the hurricane, I love it. Absolutely love it, because the product has been garbage so far. We talked about last year, it's been mediocre. You know what? It's been garbage. I don't care about scoring. It has nothing to do with scoring. It has to do with the fact that it's been awful. on the eyes to watch. Did you watch any of that Thursday night game? Houston, Cincinnati. Oh my God.
No, I caught the end. I was on an airplane and fortunately, I guess, could not watch it.
Oh my God. I cannot believe I had it on TV too. So I must've glanced over a handful of times. I didn't have any fantasy implications. So I don't even know why I had the game on. I should have just shut it off. I guess I wanted to see my boy, Andy Dalton, who I raved about, who has been absolutely horrific. And they're talking about AJ McCarron now.
A fantasy riser, quite the riser so far, as this Thomas Rawls.
He's not that. Oh, my God. Rawls, a different story. But Dalton is not this bad.
Yeah, Andy Dalton.
And Cincinnati would be mistaken. They would really be mistaken to bench him this early. Look, if he does this for another few games, I understand you got to decide. You got to do something. Don't do it after two games. It would be a rash decision. Don't do it, Cincinnati.
Cincinnati went two straight games without scoring a touchdown at home, right?
At home, yeah.
I think there's only one other team that hasn't scored a touchdown yet, and that is the San Francisco 49ers. The Giants were aiming to be the third team through 2 weeks without having scored a touchdown, but they did come close. Jeez. This Thursday night game, yes, is very exciting. It's the 49ers, aforementioned, hosting the L.A. Rams. Yes.
DVRs, people.
Over under 40.
So for those of you that are celebrating Rosh Hashanah and enjoying your Rosh Hashanah matzo ball soup dinner and all the trimmings, set your DVRs.
You know what? In fairness, though, that's not the game with the lowest over under for the week. There is one lower.
Well, this slate of games this week is awful.
Yeah, it is. The Jaguars hosting the Ravens.
Dude, isn't there a London game? What's the London game? Is there a London
that
game?
That's the London game.
Oh, week three? Are they out? What is with them? My God. Week three? London game? Jeez.
9:30 start. Yes, get excited. Blake Bortles, 9:30 primetime Sunday morning at Eastern.
Oh yeah, that is prime time, I guess, for the London audience. Ugh, but just whatever.
Well,
bad crop of games this week. Really is a bad crop of games. So you look at this Cleveland Indianapolis. Ugh, my God,
Indianapolis is an underdog by 1 point at home hosting Cleveland.
That's amazing. When was the last time that Cleveland was a road favorite? That's a good one to look up.
That is brutal. The Jets have their home opener hosting the Dolphins. That should be a walk. I mean, Jay Ajayi should just be able to torch the defense and have his 200-yard outburst if they feed him the rock 25 times.
Yeah. Well, considering
Kenyon Drake and Damian Williams will get in on the action.
Oh yeah, the whole group of them. They're gonna, I'm sure, be licking their chops to maybe get their own 26 or 43 or 52-yard touchdown runs in, as what the Raiders did this past weekend. You would have thought, like, oh my God, did the Raiders have like Jim Brown and Gale Sayers and Emmitt Smith? No, they had Cordell Patterson though, and the Jalen Richard running all over Raiders.
So, where do you even begin on that? The Raiders go to the nation's capital Sunday night.
Oh, that's a Sunday night game. Yeah, Oakland, Washington.
Yep. So that should be good. That easily is the highest over under 54 points, and
doesn't exactly excite you,
the Raiders are road favorites. Washington's getting 3 points.
Yeah, that seems about right.
Monday night. Dallas tries to get redemption. They have to go to Arizona.
And that place will be like three quarters Dallas fans.
And Dallas 3-point favorites. So Arizona is a much better team at home. They had two tough, I shouldn't say tough, take that back. They had two East Coast 1 o'clock games to start the year. I don't know how much you should really believe in traveling, cross country for an early start, the first or second week. I don't really see how that is such a huge deal. In week 12, okay, I kind of get it, but week one or two, whatever.
Yeah, you wouldn't think it'd be a big deal that early, but yeah, so they come home, Arizona. And Arizona, I think they're gonna right the ship a little bit. And I think actually I can very easily see them knocking off the Cowboys and then seeing panic.
Well, that's NFC Super Bowl team, Arizona Cardinals.
Oh, that's
with
right.
Johnson now out for 8 weeks at least.
David Johnson. Oof. So, I mean, you feel it's amazing. It's talked about more for fantasy implications than it is for implications for Arizona. Everybody's like, oh, my God, what about all the people's fantasy teams drafting a number one and spending $90 on them? Oh, my God. What about Arizona? You don't think Arizona's there? Brutal. Like, what about us? Well, he's actually playing for our team. But at least they have the amazing Chris Johnson, who I picked up along with Andre Ellington. Yes.
Who was cut. And they re-signed him. Johnson was cut. And they re-signed him after David Johnson was injured.
Oh, and I saw it coming from a mile away that Chris Johnson's going to take a stranglehold of that lead back. Even if it's a committee, he'll be the lead dog there. So if you picked up Kerryn Williams, whoops. Nah. Kerryn Williams stinks. He is not going to be. He might get a handful of carries. He is not the lead dog there. So, all right. So is there anything more that you wanted to get in about your beloved New York Jetropolitan?
No, I mean, I mentioned it's pretty much the Sam Darnold watch from the New York media.
Which really stinks. I will say.
I'm going to watch the games. I mean, you just have low expectations. It's sad. This is what we came to expect. I mean, there's really nothing too surprising at this point.
The defense, I think, has been the fact that they have not been able to tackle a thing in the first two games. I mean, Buffalo and Oakland ran all over the Jets. What was funny, actually, is that I read a couple articles that both referenced the Heidi game, which is the famous Raider-Jet game from 1968, where the Jets had a lead. They turned the ball over. Oakland scored, and then Oakland scored again to win the game. But nobody saw it in New York because CBS cut the Heidi, and everybody's like, "What the hell? What the hell? What happened? What happened?" And then it was like an epic collapse and finish. And so it was funny that was referenced. How Jet fans probably wish that CBS did the same thing, so they could didn't have to. They could have averted their eyes from that, you know, just shellacking. But here's the one thing I'll say. You mentioned Sam Darnold, and that's all that the New York media cares about. It really is becoming almost like a self-fulfilling prophecy for this Jet, you know, this Jet group that has to, you know, hear about that all the time and, you know, read the clippings and hear about how this team was basically set up to fail. And, you know, it's just, how do you play in the NFL? You know, you're playing football, and how are you able to play under those circumstances where the GM doesn't really give a damn about this team winning? The coach looks like he just is indifferent and just has no clue and basically knows he's dead man walking. It's just become like a self-defeatist like attitude and approach, I think, from that team. And you know what? You can't completely blame them. And it's going to be like this all season.
Yeah, I don't know what are like the post game. I got to watch a post game press conference for this team.
Bowles, he looks like he's just he's like numb. I don't think he doesn't show any emotion.
I missed him because I'm watching the 4 o'clock games on Red Zone. You know, after the Jet 1 o'clock games have ended, so I'm not catching it, and I haven't really, admittedly, gone out of my way to catch the Jets press conference.
Well, I mean, that'll put you to sleep like in 2 minutes. I mean, he has a personality of a wet mop, Todd Bowles. So, I mean, you listen to him talk, and you're like, drone on, and you're like, oh, God, I can't take anymore. But, I mean, it just looks like he just doesn't care. Like, not that he doesn't care, but it's just like he knew this was coming, and like, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Hey.
Well, Austin Seferian Jenkins comes back in week three, so there you go.
Fire pickup of the week, everybody. Make sure to get your bids in right now for Austin Seferian Jenkins. I actually have a role in this offense. Who knows? I mean, you know, with Jermaine Gresham.
Look, it would be very disappointing if they don't at least try, because he probably has the most talent of any offensive weapon they might have. But by the way, Bilal Powell almost looked like he was getting phased out of the offense last week. That made no sense to me either.
Everybody expected him to play a much bigger role, and he didn't do anything.
I didn't really understand that. He played like less than 20%.
Who's the other guy? Elijah
McGuire. Yeah, it's a rookie running back that may have gotten as much, if not more, snap percentage than Bilal Powell. Really bizarre.
Just red, you know, just a big giant red stay away flashing light when it comes to any Jet player in the fantasy world. But
hell?
I mean, and McCown is a competent quarterback. I mean, you mentioned McCown.
Yes.
McCown is a competent quarterback.
Yes, he can
handle man the position.
An upgrade for a handful of teams in the NFL currently.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, look at the Colts, look at the, you know, you want to throw the Bengals in there, but look at the, you know, Houston, a team that has
Jacksonville.
I mean, 49ers. I mean, Hoyer's always stunk. Hoyer's, you know, fitting into that.
Hoyer is He lures you because he has the occasional game where he throws for 350, but then I don't even know if he hit 100 yards against Seattle passing. Carlos Hyde was the entire offense. I was shocked. Carlos Hyde ran for $124. Yeah, Brian Hoyer, 15 for 27 for 99 yards.
Jeez.
For the whole game.
Stafford threw for like 122 yesterday, so for those that were hoping for a big game from him. But,
oh, my God, 15 for 99. Jeez.
99 yards the whole game.
Jeez. Brutal. I know that Seattle's defense is pretty good, but oof.
I mean, there's just not that many good quarterbacks in this league, and the teams that don't have them –
would not be able to, especially Houston. I mean, Deshaun Watson, come on. The guy, who knows if he'll ever be an NFL quarterback. They have a tailor-made-to-win right now defense. I mean, you can mention other teams, too, as we said. Colin Kaepernick, how is he still sitting out? Because he puts his knee on the ground, and he gets shunned by society and then subsequently shunned by the NFL and the cowardly owners that don't want to upset their fan bases.
I saw a clip of a rant from Max Kellerman of all people.
Okay.
And his analogy, it's not dead on, but it's a good try, is that basically Colin Kaepernick is the sacrificial lamb of this movement. Like the Kurt Flood was the sacrificial lamb for the free agency movement. Totally different issues.
But that's kind of what he was alluding to, is that somebody has to
you know, bite the bullet. It has to be some person that gives himself up for the greater good going forward, because the next person that, like all the other people that put their knee down, I mean, they haven't gotten shunned from the league. It was just because he was the first person to do it. So all these other guys, you know, they're going to get signed. Even if they're on a team now, but they get cut, they'll be brought back. You know, who cares if it's the second guy?
Right, and it's also who cares if it's, you know, the defensive lineman that I barely know the name of and I don't, you know, pay attention to because he's the defensive lineman, where Colin Kaepernick obviously is the quarterback, and he was doing it with, you know, the first guy to do it, as you say. I mean, he is a sacrificial lamb, and again, I mean, Kaepernick has still not said a word. He's just basically, I'm sitting patiently at my phone. When somebody calls, I'm happy to answer. I'm not going to yell, scream, complain. You know, protest the fact that I'm being shunned for my protest. I mean, you give the guy credit, and I think he wants to come back real bad, and I think he's just waiting by his phone, waiting for the phone call. And you know what? For teams that want to come up their nose, spite their face, just to avoid upsetting a few morons, you know what? Like, especially Houston. I mean, Houston, you talk about a team again that could use him so just. I mean, that division stinks. I know Tennessee, you know, looks like they're okay team. Jacksonville still stinks. We know Indy without Luck is just a, you know, a black hole of football, even as bad as the Jets. But I mean, the fact that Colin Kaepernick is still sitting there is really just astounding to me. It really is. But hey,
we'll see. How desperate will a team get is really the question, and we'll see. I mean, more quarterbacks. Unfortunately, there will be quarterbacks that get injured. There will be more quarterbacks that get injured, and the backup is going to come in and be terrible. And somebody's going to take a shot. Like, did they get desperate enough? A team that has playoff aspirations and they know their backup is just completely incompetent, they may take it. We'll see. All right, let's move on to some baseball.
Oh, the other sport, yes.
Look, an exciting race that I should be giving more attention to, with the Yankees, with a bunch of youngsters more or less, and a couple of pieces added via trade deadline. But they've resurged. They've overcome their swoon, and here they are, right in the thick of it, and likely playoff bound. Yes.
Well, I mean, you've been glued to the TV with every pitch, right? I mean, you haven't missed a single pitch. Even as we speak, the Yankees are in the midst of taking on the Twins, and you probably just keep looking at your TV, cannot look away, right? Isn't that correct, Mr. Ip, as you sort of alluded to all those weeks ago when you gave up on your New York Mets? Do the Mets still exist? Were they fielding their...
Matt Harvey pitched last night, actually.
they were fielding their instructional league lineup and sending out Matt Harvey to, feeding him to the Wolves.
Another talk about a sacrificial lamb.
Dark Knight. Did you see his stat line? Huh?
Did you see his stat line?
I did not. I know he got shellacked again, and he's turned into. I'm stealing this from Mr. Francesa, the fat man himself. He called him Cinderella once, so he's went from the Dark Knight to Cinderella. So that's what
four innings pitched, 12 hits, 7 earned runs. Oh my god.
Oh man, how the mighty have fallen in Matt Harvey, a star that has shot down to earth and left a giant, massive, flaming crater in its wake.
And that was his fourth game. That was his fourth game back, which I didn't realize he's been back that long.
I mean, what is his ERA since he came back? Like 120?
Well, I'm looking right now. So he's let up 7 runs, 2 runs, 5 runs, and 7 runs in the 4 starts. In each of the starts, how about this? In each of his 4 starts, he has let up more runs than he's recorded strikeouts in each of them.
Oh, that's awesome. Oh, that's so good. It must be fattening. And speaking of fattening, Mr. Harvey.
And in 3 of them, the margin at least 3, where he's had more runs than strikeouts.
Oh my god! That one used to be like 1 run and like 11 strikeouts. So it was like a typical game for him. And oh my, the tables have turned.
Wow.
I guess you do feel a little bad, but
you have to feel bad.
But I mean, oh man, it's so bleak for the Mets right now. We don't have to spend we'll talk about the Mets, I guess, plenty at some point. Maybe in when we're doing our 2017 preview, we're talking about how they look like they're going to be as big a disaster as they were this year, but. I mean, Matt Harvey has 1 more year left with the Mets until they cut him loose. So, he's a free agent. And then, who the hell knows? They'll be lucky to get like a 1-year, $4 million deal from somebody that takes a flyer on him.
God, it's fitting. The Mets had a 4-1 lead in the bottom of the ninth tonight. And A.J. Ramos in Miami, the former Miami closer, blows the lead in the bottom of the ninth, and the Mets lose in extra innings.
That sounds about right. that's fitting, too. A.J. Ramos, who they're, I guess, hoping maybe will be a dependable bullpen guy for them next year with Familia.
Brutal. All right, so look.
Yankees. The team
are we paying attention to the Yankees? Yes.
The team that's winning. So down the stretch they come. As the Yankees, sitting right now, 3 games still behind the Red Sox. The Red Sox, did they win tonight? I know they were in extras. Is that game still going on? The Red Sox won.
The Red Sox won, 1-0.
Unbelievable. So they win 2 straight games now in extra innings against the Orioles. Jeez. Man. So the Red Sox win again. The Yankees now they can best hope for is they would lead 5-2 in their game. The Yankees can now hope that they still remain 3 games at the end of the night if they hold on for the win tonight. And, 3 games behind the Red Sox. They are coming down the stretches. We have a week and a half now to go in the season. The Yankees have already set up their rotation for the last week and a half as they prepare for the wild card game, which it looks like right now that they're going to be in. I'd be very surprised if they catch the Red Sox. But what Joe Girardi has done is he has set up his rotation that if Luis Severino needs to, he can pitch the last weekend. It would be Saturday or Sunday. They moved them up. He's pitching tomorrow, but they have an off day. So that means he wouldn't be scheduled to pitch until next Wednesday, but they can move him up to Monday or Tuesday if they wish. And then have them either for Saturday or Sunday if the division is still within reach. Thing is, if you go for the division, and you won't, again, we'll see where they're at, but if they go for the division and they don't get it, Severino then cannot pitch the wild card game against probably the team they're playing right now, the Minnesota Twinkies. So that's the dilemma, potential dilemma for Joe Girardi, but they and for everybody involved, as we know, but they set it up so that Severino, if need be, can pitch the last weekend. If not, he will be the starter in the wild card game. That is where the Yankees are at least with their starting rotation. Playing, again, as I mentioned, playing Minnesota right now, the likely opponent, although the Angels are only a game behind Minnesota, so I shouldn't say likely opponent, but one of the two. It'll be them or the Angels. Everybody else, I think, is going to fall back, and they pretty much have. Nobody really on the starting staff for the Angels scares you. Good lineup, Minnesota. Irvin Santana's had a very good year, pitched well yesterday at Yankee Stadium. him versus Severino would be a very good matchup. And the Yankees, a better team than the Twins, really no excuse for losing to either the Twins or whoever they play, them, the Angels. But the Yankees are still going to try and catch the Red Sox, but it's going to be very difficult coming down the stretch. They play only one more road series, the Yankees do, against Toronto, I think. Is that when did the Yankees play Toronto?
Well, while you're looking at, one thing you didn't mention is that Severino got moved up to replace what would have been Tanaka's spot. So what's the story there? I don't see – I just see that he got pushed back, but no one why.
Well, I mean, it has nothing to do with Tanaka. I mean, they like giving Tanaka extra days anyway, as we know, but it has nothing to do with that. It's just to make sure that if they want, they can pitch him the last weekend of the season. That's the only reason. As far as I know, it has nothing to do with Tanaka. It's just for that reason. So the Yankees are going to – yeah, I mean, I have no reason that they didn't say anything otherwise. So they go to Toronto. They have the off day on Thursday after the afternoon game tomorrow. Three games in Toronto. Come home for KC for a makeup game, Tampa Bay, and then Toronto. So there you have it for the Yankees. Lineup really has been the – yep, go ahead.
No, I was going to change the subject off the Yankees, but give your 2 cents on the Yankees.
I mean, hey, look, right now everything looks like it's fitting into place. Lineup, you know, looks good. Everybody's basically back and for the most part healthy. Ellsbury's been tremendous. 385 in his last 22 games with 18 runs scored and a 481 on base percentage. Everybody wanted him banished to Siberia, and look at him come roaring back. So kudos to him. He's done a really good job. Judge looks like, you know, he's hitting the ball a lot better. Not where he was, but a lot better. The bullpen has fallen into place except for Betances, and he still looks like he just doesn't, for whatever reason, he can't locate his fastball. He's beyond wild. He only trusts his curveball at times, which when he drops it and it has bite, it's a good pitch. But when he hangs one, as we saw him do against Manny Machado, it gets hit 400 feet. Betances right now, I mean, they're going to need him too. So they may demote him. Maybe they give the eighth inning, you know, exclusively to either Robertson or to Conley. We'll see. But, you know, getting Warren back, they have Green, who's been phenomenal. You know, Conley's been, for the most part, pretty good. Robertson's, you know, they trust him in any situation. And Chapman looks like he's finally righted the ship and back in the closer role, which is where they wanted him all along. So, Yankees right now, if they get to division series, they can definitely give at least a formidable challenge to either Houston or Cleveland as they're duking it out for best record in the AL. And really, that's where you're at. I mean, baseball, it's been pretty boring. I mean, when you look at the races, I mean, it has not been at all scintillating when you look at both leagues. I mean, the divisions have all, for the most part, been wrapped up except for the AL East and I guess the NL Central, if you want to call that a race over there. I mean, I think the Cubs, despite how just above average they've been at best, I mean, they are going to win that division. The wild card still up for grabs in the NL, too. I think that's between Colorado. Arizona is going to be one of the teams that will be between Colorado, Milwaukee, St. Louis. Who cares? Whatever.
One thing to point, though, is several months ago we talked about how it was two teams that had those two wild card spots locked up. And now, because you have two wild card spots, there's a race for the second one.
Yeah, but nobody cares. It's not exciting. I mean, big deal. Well, I mean, I guess if you're in like
it's not exciting in New York, but it's exciting for the Cardinals fans. It's exciting for the Brewers fans. The Brewers might make the wild card game. It's a big deal to the Milwaukee fans.
I guess for the Brewers. All right, fine. I'll give you the Brewers. I mean, the Brewers still stay. I have no idea how the hell.
And the Rockies? Why not? You don't think the Colorado Rockies fans are excited? They may make the play-in game.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. They're gonna go to Arizona and lose. Arizona's better than all those teams. Colorado's a good team. But Milwaukee and St. Louis stink. I mean, geez. They just don't stink. It's just they're a product, of a bad.
Do you know who currently stinks? Okay, talking about stinking, do you know who actually has the worst team in ML – the worst record in baseball right now? Don't look. Just off the top of your head.
Well, I know the Phillies did for a while, right? I know the Phillies and the Giants were duking it out there. I guess if you're asking me, and then nobody would be shocked if it was the Phillies, although the hip did predict the Phillies would be a sleeper. Whoops. I'll guess the Giants. You're the Giants.
It is currently the Giants with a 384 winning percentage.
And my fellow Colt, my
Padres have 9 more wins than the Giants.
That is amazing. The Giants
have Giants won are 38 and a half games out of first place behind the Dodgers.
I mean, they lost Baumgartner, but I mean, who could have seen that coming? They won 3 World Series this decade. Jeez. About the Phillies. The Phillies actually won a handful of games recently, or they just
speaking of winning a handful of games, the Cleveland Indians. Jesus.
Yeah, well, we didn't mention them. 22 in a row. And the Indians right now, I mean, they are Houston, you tip your hat to Houston. Obviously, everything that's gone on there with the hurricane, you know, bringing in Verlander, who's been terrific for them. I would take him on my team in a heartbeat. I don't care what he was doing in Detroit. I would be terrified of him in a short series. You know, ace is ace, Mr. McCullers, who knows what his deal is going to be. Keuchel's good. Verlander scares the hell out of me. And Cleveland, you know, they were just rolling and no reason to think that they're right now going to be the favorites to get back to the World Series. I mean, it's Cleveland, it's Houston, and then it's Boston and the Yankees and the second tier behind them and everybody else. Who cares? So there you have it. There's your little recap or update as to where we are. The Yankees, you know, will be in the playoffs, whether it's the wild card game, the one or game 163. Or will they actually be in the divisional series for the first time since 2012? How about that?
How about are the Islanders your hipster moment of zenith?
Oh, God. I won't classify them as the hipster moment of zenith just because training camp has begun. You for NHL training camps opening up, which includes our beloved New York Islanders.
Good.
I can tell. Your silence says it all. You're just overcome with excitement. All right.
Pretty much.
Let's go, Islanders.
So the can't Islanders, wait till we go to a game this year. Yes,
indeed. The Barclays Center awaits.
We'll do our say hello to Mr. Hornick, and then we'll go to the seats that we see are still available for purchase on StubHub.
Our $9 seats, or if we sneak down to the lower bowl where nobody cares there. So the Islanders actually played a game at the Nassau Coliseum, which was sold out. Now, of course, keep in mind that the Coliseum holds less people than were at Donald Trump's inauguration. How many people were at that inauguration again? Like 34 or something. So just keep that in mind. 13,000 at the Coliseum. That's your capacity. Sold out. The fans actually chanting for the team, the return to Long Island. So you had, and it was funny, they described it as like a playoff-like atmosphere, if you could believe that, for a preseason game in September.
I could.
And it's just amazing. And obviously,
well, it was a Sunday, 1 o'clock, you know, bring your family out. Let's get rowdy. And it's a novelty because they don't play any regular season games at the Coliseum. Yeah. So I could see that.
Yeah, it's just amazing though, and like everybody's just talking about like the building and how crazy and loud the fans were, and even the players. I heard Tavares
comments on it.
It is. I mean, it's and you know, but it's not the. What's amazing is that it's not the Coliseum though. It's not the same building. They've redone it. Yes, it's in the same spot. It's essentially the same structure, but it's completely. And I haven't seen it. I don't really care if I ever do. So. I mean, I'm sure I will at some point, but I could care less. Whatever. They're never coming back there. To some people's chagrin and dismay, I'm sorry, it's not happening. You root for Belmont if you're an Islander fan. That's what you hope for. The proposals are in, or at least the Islanders is, and then the decision's made at the end of the month. So I guarantee we'll talk about it when that comes up. But. Whatever, you know, it was nice. Okay, fine. Moving on. We'll preview the Islanders. Not yet. We will, and talk about how they're going to be one of the other mediocre teams in the league. There are so many on the fringe of the playoffs with their new toy, Jordan Eberle, and their same old problems that they have with the rest of their forward group and defensemen and Tavares, Willie, Woney, Izzy, Willie. What's he going to do? What's he thinking?
All right.
It's going to be a very interesting year out on the.
And I think was it announced today that Mr. Mike Francesa will still be retiring from his duties on the Fan as on December 15th? Yes, confirmed today.
Yes, it was. Well, we haven't met Craig Carton since our last show has officially resigned, so he is no more a WFAN personality.
Crazy.
And is now the morning show with Boomer.
You had to expect the resignation.
Oh, of course.
But the fact that it still happened, and now it's called the morning show with Boomer Esiason.
Just out of the blue.
Just incredible.
Yep. And all of a sudden, they scrubbed out Carton, and you wouldn't even it's like he was never there. 10 years, well, and it's like, was Craig Carton even here?
No, they had to. I mean, I'm sure he gets it. He's come out, and you know, apparently he's going to fight the charges. We'll see if he backs down.
They just, I don't know. Make doesn't look good. Up out of thin air. So I'm sure there's something there.
The FBI is not, look, for $5.6 million. The FBI is bigger fish to fry. This likely came about from as a result of a higher level investigation of bigger dollars that led to this, and because he's a public figure, he was an easy target to make an example out of that got big headlines. His case probably got bigger headlines than whose ever case involved tens or hundreds of millions of dollars in related schemes.
Yeah, because I mean, you don't think of that. I mean, you're right. I mean,
you know, they weren't a public figure, so
yeah, no, it's interesting. You don't think about that, but yeah, I'm sure.
Doesn't make his, you know, alleged acts any less egregious.
No,
but it's not like the FBI wakes up one day and says, "Oh, well, how can we take down Craig Carton?" Doesn't exactly work like that. They backed into it.
Yep.
All right. So the hipster moment of Zenith? Yes.
Yes, well, you mentioned Mr. Francesa, yes.
There you go. So well, of course, that has to be the hipster. Well,
I'm so honored that you would make me the hipster moment of Zenith again for what is this, like the seventh time now? But yes, it's very sad. He will be leaving. That's that's hipster moment of Zenith. That's it. He's leaving. It's very sad. Oh, he actually, and I was listening to
before you continue, it's going to an adhere quickly because your mic suddenly got very staticky. So do the redo. Yes, technological interlude. Technological interlude. I'll keep singing. Yes, as the lip. Or you could have just tried to listen to him in static. Yes, I suck at improvisation. And now we can't hear the lip. Oh yes, you better exit the Google Hangouts that we do our show through in return. Yes, anybody that's listened to almost this full hour is now getting a very special elongated soliloquy about absolutely nothing. Yes. Well, I should jump the gun and do the hipster beer of the week, and then the lip can finish with his hipster moment of Zenith. Yeah. Oh, okay, you're back. Fine. I was just going to do the hipster beer of the week while we're waiting for you to return, but no, you got back in time as I continue my soliloquy. Okay, go with the hipster moment of Zenith.
Yes. So anyway, I apologize. As I was saying, so Mr. Francesa, and I got to hear this live, so it was absolutely fantastic. I was in stitches. I'm walking on the street, and I must have had like at least four people like us turn their heads as they're walking past me as they see me react. So... True story.
No, I mean, I'm laughing because that's probably what you sounded like on the sidewalk with your headphones on.
I mean,
because
keep it reserved.
I'm sure if they had to guess what you were listening to, I'm sure the first thing they would have thought of was that you were listening to live radio with headphones on the sidewalk, because that's what we all do.
Yeah, I mean, what do you think? I was listening to music or something? Maybe they thought I was reacting to a funny song lyric. No, actually, I was reacting to the commentary from Mike Francesa over the Penn State Georgia State finale. Now, I don't know if you're familiar with the story.
I read about it today. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Because it became a story. Now, this was the ending was not that big of a story nationally. It was, you know, like more just kind of the fringe parts of college football. So Penn State beat up on Georgia State, who has had a program for like 5 years or seven, whatever it is, football program there. Penn State, back from the dead after the Paterno era, won 56-0 against Georgia State. Now, with about 10 seconds to go in the game, Georgia lined up for a field goal to break the shutout and, you know, just get some points on the board and make them feel a little good. But Penn State coach James Franklin decided that it was more important to keep his shutout than allowing Georgia State to get on the scoreboard. So he decides that he is going to pull what a lot of coaches do with field goals that are impending by calling a timeout just as the kick is about to happen. So what happens? The kick goes up. It's good. Everybody thinks, okay, game over. They scored, you know, very nice. Everybody shake hands, go home. Oh, wait a minute. No, timeout. Timeout was called. Kick doesn't count. Timeout. So they re-kicked it. They missed it, preserved the shutout. And I guess Franklin was smiling on the sideline and shaking hands because they preserved the shutout. So who cares? Whatever. He's a jerk. He sounds like a jerk, but whatever. Why are you telling us? Well, so someone called up Francesi yesterday at the right before the 6 o'clock hour to make this point and say, well, you know, what a jerk this Penn State coach was for doing it. It was Mike and Montclair, by the way. So Francesi was like, well, if that's true, and like he knew nothing about it, but he's like, if that's true, then yeah, I can't believe that. That's outrageous. But then a couple of Penn State fans in knee jerk, you know, of course, in typical reaction, oh, how dare you attack my alma mater? They decide that they're going to call up and defend their coach, like just like clockwork, you know. You knew it was coming, so here they are defending their head coach. Oh, he said that he gave his explanation. He said that he had to get his field goal kicking, his field goal blocking team on the field. He had his fourth string team out there. He had to call timeout. So they're making excuses for him, and Francesa is going berserk. He is absolutely losing it, you know, saying you're lying, you know, you're making up excuses for him. The coach lied. He's a horse's ass. He's a jerk. Oh my God, it was a phenomenal impromptu rant. If you haven't heard this, please give it a listen. Go to WFAN.com audio, Mike Francesa /... You'll find it there. Listen to it. It's gold. It is, even if you don't know who he is, listen to it because it is radio gold. You know, you're now familiar with the story. That's all there is to it. So listen to it. Absolutely phenomenal.
Okay.
And that was my hip on the zenith, and I'm very glad I can share it with all of you.
Yes, after you reconnected your technology, thank you for returning to give the final segue. Oh.
Well, are we going to do NFL picks? I'm sure our fans would love us to do NFL picks. Oh, should we bypass week 3's amazing games?
Well, let's pick up 2 games each.
Yeah, so we'll throw them out there quickly.
Yeah, so I am gonna pick Carolina is so tough. I mean, they couldn't put up a touchdown at home against the Bills, and now they host the Saints and have 6 point and are 6 point favorites at home. I mean, the Saints can't defend anybody. But Cam Newton has not looked that good.
That's all right. So is that your pick?
I'm gonna go with Carolina. I think New Orleans is gonna start 0-3. It's gonna be tough. But yep. So Carolina -6 at home. And pick number 2. You don't never take a road favorite, but there's a lot of them this week. How about Denver getting 3 in Buffalo? I think Buffalo just has little playmaking down the field on offense. You saw it on display in full force at Carolina. LeSean McCoy, Denver's going to sell out to stop him, just like they took care of Ezekiel Elliott. I get it. It's in Buffalo. It's across the country. It's probably a 1 o'clock game. I'm still taking Denver. So they'll win by more than 3. Those are my 2 picks. Right. Off the cuff.
Let's see here. All right. All right. How about Atlanta at Detroit? That's an interesting matchup. So Atlanta on the road is laying 3.5 against the Lions. I'm tempted to take the Lions here because I think that the Lions are definitely an improved team, and I will take the Lions. How about that? So there you go. I'm going to take
because
the Lions.
Because of Amir Abdullah, obviously, breaking out a couple long runs.
Don't look at Detroit's offensive stats last week. I mean, that was basically like one of those games, just the way the game script that just wasn't conducive for them to put up big numbers. You saw them do it in week 1 at home. I think they're going to do it again. I like Denver. I'm sorry. I like Detroit's offense against Atlanta defense. I know that Atlanta's defense is improved this year. They have a good pass rush. But I think that Detroit is going to be able to score points. And honestly, I think Atlanta, as great as they are at home on offense, and I know that they're playing in the dome there in Detroit, I think that this could potentially be a very high scoring game, but I think that this is a game. I wish I was getting 3.5. Even if it's a push, I'll take it. Give me Detroit. I like Detroit here at home against Atlanta. +3 Detroit, and that line I think is going to move also. I think that actually will go up for Atlanta. So I'll take it right now at +3. Where Detroit giving away 3 at home against Atlanta. All right, one other game here. All right, I'm going to cop out, and I'm going to say the Jets are just an absolute. we've said it, Miami. Six-point favorites on the road. I know it's Miami. It's Jay Cutler. It's a Miami team that perennially, when they go in the come up here, they usually don't play overly well. The Jets usually get up for Miami. I just don't see the Jets getting up for anybody this year. I think that this is definitely a game where, even if it's close early on, that maybe there's a bomb from Cutler to Parker at the end of the game. They pull away. Ajayi, like you said, will probably run for 200 yards. I can very well see Miami putting up upwards of, you know, high 20s, maybe even low 30s against the Jets. Maybe like a 20, let's say like a 27, like 16 type of game. I can very easily see. Give me Miami. On the road, giving away 6 points at the Jets. Jets just stink. I had to do it.
Okay.
All right. So there you go. Your 2 picks for the week. We will. I love doing the picks. We'll do the picks every week because it's fun. But we will. That'll take us to our last segment, the hipster beer of the week, which is everybody's favorite, yours and mine. What do you got for us this week, Mr. Hip?
A New Jersey microbrewery called Brix City Brewing, BRIX, located in Little Ferry, New Jersey. I don't know if I've ever seen their cans available for sale outside of New Jersey. So, little incentive to make your way into New Jersey and buy them at MetLife Stadium. Oh, no, they don't really do craft beer. Sorry.
Get your Bud Light here.
Righteous Jams is the name of the beer. It's a New England double IPA, double dry hop with Mosaic and Citra Lupulin powder. So we mention it because that is the craze these days with the Lupulin powder and the New England style double IPAs. And yes, they are in the mix too. And I had it and it was very enjoyable. So if you see Brick City, give them a shot. And that is your show. Like us, or rate us, I should say, on iTunes. You could like our Facebook page, which we've neglected to update. Oh, well. More importantly, rate us on iTunes if you listen through an iPhone.
and I've sent that a few tweets recently too.
And follow at Hip in the Lip. The Lip is dominating the tweets there, and sing along with us right now.
All right.
Yes. Oh God! Oh my God! I love my picks. Love my picks.
Right now.
Oh, Kareem Hunt.